All right, so during this conference, the heads of state, the world figureheads, got together to divide up Africa. And if you notice, at the table, you can see what's been decaled. Ooh, I'm getting all of this feedback. Don't like that. You can see a map of Africa. So again, these were signifying leaders of Europe. Is there anything that you notice specifically about their attire? Right. So it is not what we would consider traditional European attire, specifically men's attire from the time. But if you notice, the style of the fashion is very European, and yet the fabric itself is what we would consider to be African. One of the things that I wanted to bring to your attention, if you've seen any of Shonabari's work, this is really his signature style, is having this kind of ornate textiles. And to give you a little bit of history on the textiles, they're batik, and as you all said, it's what we traditionally associate with African motifs, African patterns. But interestingly enough, these were manufactured by the Dutch in Indonesia. So it was actually Europeans that designed and manufactured these. And then when the fabric didn't sell well in Indonesia, they decided that they would export them into West Africa, where they became very successful to the point where they've become commodified in what we think of as traditional African textiles. So again, you have this contradiction and this artifice that, you know, these were traditionally would be considered, you know, products of Europe, and yet now they've been adopted by Western Africa. As you all look at the different fabrics, is there anything else you notice? Are they all the same? Are they different? The suits? The fabrics, the designs? Yeah, right? So each one is different. And I don't know if when you were growing up, your mother or father told you, like, you shouldn't really mix, you know, plaids and polka dots or, you know, stripes and certain colors because you would be considered that you didn't match, right? So one of the things I also find really interesting is that Shonabari has really kind of broken all of those rules, and there's something that's very excessive. And he's using this fabric or this excess as a sign, or this decoration as a sign of excess. And also the individuality of each one, it begins to talk about the fabrication of identity. Is there anything else you all notice about this? Aaron gave me one little tip, which I wasn't aware of. If you look closely, each mannequin has a solid gold pocket watch. And so that, again, that kind of excess, and you can see. Is there anything unusual that you notice about the body language or the gesture?
Yeah. I think even though there's headless, but there's still body language.
Yes. So, and Tuba said anger, so you can see this body language. To me, when I looked at it, I thought, here are a bunch of very powerful men, and they're deciding the fate of Africa. But they're sitting very closely together, and they're touching each other. And so one would assume that they have their own country's self-interest at heart, and yet there's almost this, you know, intimacy around the table, which I find to be contradictory.
Would you make the style of the chairs as unique?
Yes, and that was the one thing I was wondering, because if you notice the level of detail and the intricacy of the design of the clothing, and yet the table and chairs is very prefab. So it's meant to reference the style of furniture at the time, but it's again only referencing it's artificial, right? It's a fake, which I think, you know, you see him do over and over again. Does anybody have any additional thoughts or questions on this particular work? Yeah, and that brings up these issues of power, right? That in the exchange of power and who has the power. And part of Shonabari's interest is being able to kind of deconstruct history in a way that makes us, you know, think about power. And alliances, you know, who's you can begin to see by the body language who is aligned with who. Thanks, Brian. Let's go to this. I'm going to pass. We're going to pass this around so everybody can take a look at it. So, and feel free to move. You don't have to stay in your spot is not, you know, designated as your spot. You can move around and enjoy and see the art from different perspectives. So this is a photograph. It's a color photo, digital color photograph that's printed on aluminum in a very ornate gold frame, and it's called I don't speak French, so I'm gonna butcher it. It's La Méduse, which stands for Medusa, and this was a French naval. Historically, it references a French naval ship that was bound to Senegal, and it ran ashore and wrecked. And let's see, I'll give you the date of this. So it happened 1816 to 17, and Shonabari is referencing this particular event of the shipwreck, but also there is a famous painting. So as the it's making its way around, somebody has it. Géricault, who is a French Romanticist painter, painted this iconic painting called The Raft of the Medusa. And specifically what happened after the shipwreck was there was a captain and 250 of his crew, and they didn't have enough lifeboats for everybody. So the captain and 250 of his crew got on the lifeboats, and they left the people behind. There were 146 men and one woman, and highly unusual to have a woman on a naval ship. So 146 men and one woman, some of them slaves, some of them servants, they had to, from the wreckage of the ship, have a makeshift raft. And at first, the captain on the lifeboat, they were towing them along, and at some point it just became too difficult, and the captain abandoned those 147 people on that raft. So what you see in Géricault's painting is you see people that are desperate. And what ended up happening, starvation, extreme heat, died only 15 survivors out of 147. They resulted to cannibalism. And Géricault, which was highly unusual for the time for a painter, he actually recreated the ship in his studio. He examined the corpses of the bodies, and he examined interviewed the survivors so he could get the full story. And then he painted, again, what's become a very iconic painting to depict this atrocity. And so it is interesting, Shonabari, this is not the first time that he has referenced art history, but that he is referencing this specific moment in history as well as the painting. Is there anything that you all notice? Exactly, yeah. So if you, the fabrics, you notice that the sails from the torn sails are the African fabrics. So he's getting that in to represent a lot of the people that died were from African descent. Does it look like a realistic shipwreck to you? They look pretty fake to me, too. The waves are made from wax and paint and foam. He recreated or had recreated a model of the Medusa ship, and this is a photograph of that model, like right at the point before it wrecked. Do you see a lot of people on board? It looks pretty empty. That's one of the things that struck me, is that, you know, unlike Gerakalt's painting, which is filled with the terror and the desperation and hopelessness of the people, you don't see any sign of life on the ship. But in talking again about that, the artifice, and how Shonabari is very interested in questioning history and showing the artifice. You have this grand scale of a photograph, but it's a complete fake, right? It was done in a studio, and yet it is representing this tragic moment in history. That's a very good question. I don't think he's suggesting that it never happened, but he's questioning how history is recorded and who has the power to record history, and those who are without power, you know, are their voices heard? Are their voices recorded in history? Is there anything else that jumps out at folks? All right. I think everybody needs to come closer because you won't be able to see what happens here. And I have another little handout for you. Okay. If you would pass that around. Has anybody heard of the artist Leonardo da Vinci? Yes. So does anybody know probably Da Vinci's most famous painting that he's known for? The Mona Lisa, of course. So the Mona Lisa is considered probably the most famous woman in history. I'll give you a little tidbit. There was actually recently another Mona Lisa painting discovered of Mona Lisa as a younger woman. And so there was all this controversy trying to decide if indeed it was Da Vinci or not. And the experts have determined that indeed it was, and they have determined the identity of the Mona Lisa, who previously there has been speculation, but no proof. So it is interesting that, again, Shonabari is using art history as a reference. This is based on a painting by Francois, I'm going to butcher it, Guillaume Menaggio, and the title is Fake Death Picture, The Death of Leonardo da Vinci. And similar to La Meduse, he's setting up a very elaborate stage set, right, where it almost looks, do you notice the dark shadows and how it really begins to look three-dimensional? It almost looks like a painting, doesn't it? Look at the color palette.
Yeah.
You thought it was a paint? Yeah. So it's very characteristic of, I'm going to say, really more late Renaissance and Baroque because of that color palette and the rich use of the shadowing and the fabric and details. But it is a photograph. Is there anything unusual? Has it been made the circulation? Has everybody seen the actual... those of you who have seen the poor reproduction of the original painting, tell me what you notice the differences are in Shonabari's interpretation. Exactly. So Leonardo is depicted wearing the African style textiles. Is there anything else you notice about the different people in the photograph? What about the race of the folks in the photograph versus the original painting? Let's see, the painting was from 1871, and it would have most likely, it would have been in Europe. I don't know where Da Vinci died, but he was Italian, so we can imagine. He did die in France. So France, 1871, would we have a scene like this where you would have people from all races at a dying man's bedside who is a...
Probably not.
No, no. So it's very unusual, and if you look at the original... did everybody get to see it? Okay. If you look at the original, you would have people from the upper class and by the bedside. And here, again, he's creating this artificial scenario, and then bringing in this his interpretation by having people that are both black and white from multiple classes in the image.
Is that one that's
Oh, that's an excellent question. Right here? Yes, very good question. I think I don't know that I'm gonna answer that. I think that could be, that's open for your interpretation, and because she does have the wings there, one of the things that when Shonabari talks about his work is he talks about it in terms of Bertolt Brecht theater. And he says that in Brecht's theater, the audience was required to finish the work. And so he doesn't like to give too much away. He likes to leave things that are a little more open-ended so you as the viewer can bring your own interpretation to it. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Yeah. I noticed the background on the news is painted. Do you think, I don't know the answer, do you think the background, some of this was painted, kind of staged that almost? Like the door doesn't look real to me.
Yes, it doesn't look real to me either. And the curtains in the bag do not look real either. And in what I've read, it says that he does create these very elaborate tableaus, so I don't know how much is done digitally to in the computer to composite. Certainly, he's having to do a lot to make that transition from straight photograph to resembling a painting. So there's got to be some digital work. Did you have a... Yes. Yes, he does look, he looks painted, doesn't he? Yeah. Yes. Truth. Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to move to, this one I think is my favorite, probably because my work is all about death. That's not going to surprise some of you. And I'm going to pass this around.
Who
you? Good. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming. So this one is also in what he calls his fake death series. And it's based on a painting of Manet called The Suicide. And this is not a painting, or I should say, this is Shonabare's, but what's making the rounds is the actual reproduction of the actual Manet painting. Has anybody familiar with Manet? He's a famous impressionist. And what are his typical subjects? Women, yeah, portraits, some landscape. So to have, it's a very unusual composition, the original painting, and a very unusual subject matter. And so for that reason, you don't see it a lot in books that are talking about Manet's work, because art historians don't really know quite what to do with it, because it doesn't really fit into his genre of other work. And the other, there's another thing about the original Manet is that the reason why they say it's fake. Did you all notice when you saw it that the man was still holding the gun? So if the man had just committed suicide, would he still be holding the gun in death? No, he would have dropped the gun. So in the Manet painting, critics and historians have said, it's a fake suicide, and that perhaps it was really meant to be a symbol of the artist trying to reinvent himself. So it, again, you all have seen in similar style to the other two photographs, Shonabare has recreated the scene but made some changes. How is this one different from Manet's original? Yeah. When you look at the original, very somber, right? Very gray. You see the blood spattered. We don't see any blood here. Does it look real? Does he really look dead to you? No. He looks like he doesn't even look like he could fall asleep in that position, does he? Because it would be very uncomfortable. He looks as if he's passed out. Yeah, a little too much to drink, perhaps. But again, you know, the signature batik textiles are evident, which create the bright color. And then in lieu of the blood, we have a red afghan. But if you notice some of the similarities, I think in the photograph directly back that we just looked at, a lot more depth, and there's more attention to trying to make it look like that particular period. Do you see that this looks, this does the bed look really old and the bed linens and things like that? Yes, it looks very contemporary. So this one has a much more contemporary feel, even though the figure, is wearing the white powdered wig and is in the period dress. There is, I think, an attempt with the carpeting on the floor to have a more period feel, and even somewhat the framed painting on the wall. How am I doing on time, Aaron? Okay. Yes, please. Recognized. Yeah, that's a very good question. So I think part of his interest in kind of questioning art history and questioning power, and you until very recently you did not have black males, or black females for that matter, achieving any kind of recognition in the art world. So there's never been somebody who's considered, a master who was a person of color. So I think, to me, this is a little bit of a subversive gesture, but it also, he has a sense of humor, right? Doesn't that, this color combination kind of make you smile? It's funny, right? He's not trying to really, I think, criticize, but more, it's a questioning, funny gesture done in a very elegant way. So I'm going to just introduce the video briefly and then allow you to enjoy and watch it. And there are some benches in there as well. So the background is he started working, Shona Bari started working in film and video. And this particular piece, I believe, was part of the interior you're going to see is in the Royal Opera House. So how many of you have heard of Swan Lake? We know the story of Swan Lake. So you have, it's really the story of a prince who wants a wife, and the swans are under a spell. And it's the story of deception. So again, Shona Bari, very interested in this artifice, deception. And so you have Odette and Odile. And when Swan Lake is traditionally performed, it's performed by the same ballerina, where Odette, who is the good ballerina, is in white. Notice the, metaphor of color for, white equals pure and good. Black is Odile, who is considered the evil swan, although really she's being used as a pawn by her father, so I don't look upon her as being evil at all. But she's always dressed in black. Notice the connection between, black equals bad. So in this, in Shona Bari's version of Swan Lake here, you just have the two dancers. One is black and one is white, and their tutus and pointe shoes are the batik textile materials. And you'll see them that they are, one is mirroring the other exactly. And I'm going to pass one more bad photograph around, bad representation of photograph. Because in addition to the reference to Swan Lake, I also started thinking about the story of Narcissus. Are you all familiar with that, the myth of Narcissus? So Narcissus was a warrior who was very, we all know the word narcissism, right? So Narcissus, that's where it comes from, is the story of Narcissus. He just loved himself so much. He thought he was great, and he became so preoccupied with himself that it ultimately killed him. So the story is he was admiring himself in a pool of water, thinking, how great he is, and he fell in and he drowned. So as you are watching the video in here, I want you to think about that, this idea of the mirroring and the reflection. But it is interesting because you might not be able to see the end. It loops over and over again. What happens is before either of them dies, they break contact and walk off stage. And also, notice when you're watching that the reflection shifts. So sometimes the white ballerina is reflecting the black ballerina's movements, and then there's a shift and it's reversed. So there's this back and forth, again, addressing these issues of race. And ballet, which is about artifice, right? It's about beauty and it's about effortless movement, and yet we all know that many of the ballerinas are starved and their bodies take a beating and they have very, limited careers because of the strain on the body. So he again is dealing with that issue of artifice and illusion. So go and enjoy, and then afterwards, if you have any comments or anything else, I welcome them. Thank you.